coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me.
Yo, what up? I hope everybody's doing well. Listen, it is Black History Month, so you know what that means. On the Coffee Black podcast and on this page, we're going to be diving into a lot of conversations with the diaspora, talking about the black history of coffee. That's what we do. And, you know, hopefully, God says the same, we can imagine some dope, beautiful ways for our communities to see black futures as well in this thing. So this episode of the Coffee Black podcast, we're going to be diving into a lot of the conversations around sustainability. Specifically with one of the things that I've learned as we've gotten into coffee and I've talked to more coffee professionals, people kind of bring up this idea of essentially like children of coffee farmers not wanting to participate in coffee anymore. And a lot of people are asking the questions, you know, will there be coffee in 50 years if a lot of people leave these farms? And people have brought up instances like things that are happening in Kenya, and it's complicated. I don't imagine that I have all the answers, but I made a connection personally, and I just kind of wanted to share that. And then I wanted to share a conversation I had with one of my friends, Carissa. She is of Trinidadian descent. She's from Trinidad, currently in the UK, working with some amazing farmers in Uganda to create sustainable options there. But we actually ended up spending most of our conversation talking about her grandparents, who are actually coffee farmers in Trinidad, and why there's this perception from children who are a part of this transatlantic slave trade reality. Like, a lot of times why they don't want to do the labor of their ancestors when it comes to growing cash crops, specifically if you're a person descended from the transatlantic slave trade whose ancestors were brought here to grow those crops. And yeah, I think the conversation may provide some insight. Again, I think these issues are complex, and I think there are silver bullets, but one thing I just noticed, you know, as I thought about this, was that many times people don't think about the reality that the narrative around coffee, oftentimes, even when we're uplifting the farmers, is still controlled from a Eurocentric perspective, and that there's trauma associated with that, and that there are tools needed to be able to reclaim dignity after you've experienced trauma, specifically trauma associated with the slave trade. It made me think about how African Americans have used hip-hop and music as a means to kind of reimagine themselves in the narrative of what has happened to them, and deal with the trauma from the slave trade, deal with the trauma from racism and from Jim Crow and the war on drugs, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. And so that ended up being a connection that I made with Carissa, because there's some trauma there, and I think there has to be some really serious reimagining and new storytelling, particularly around music and art and culture, in a global community, as hip-hop has become such a global good, right? Where people can have black spaces and reimagine black faces in those spaces. So, yeah, I hope this conversation is useful for you. We're also going to be doing a big release this week for a new part of our 1616 project, which is basically seeking to honor the theft of African products and African people. As we know, 1619 is when it's said that the first African-American slaves landed in America. 1616 is when coffee was stolen, the first coffee beans were stolen, it said, from the port of Mocha in Yemen. And we know that coffee had its origins in Ethiopia. And as it spread around the world, a lot of the financial wherewithal did not go to Ethiopia, did not go to many of these countries that we know have indigenous coffee. Even countries in West Africa that have indigenous coffee have been ignored and have had their coffee stolen or many things like that. So we really wanted to create a platform to honor that theft and reimagine that story. And so we are collabing with a couple different roasters. Our first roaster we collaborated with was Onyx, and that collaboration is still continuing. We did a collaboration with Mad Priest Coffee, which was a beautiful collaboration, and that recently just ended. And now we're doing a new one. So head over to the Instagram to find out about that. Actually, if you're listening to the podcast, I'll let you in. You know, it's with Stay Golden Coffee Co., one of our favorite roasters in Cashville, Tennessee, as we affectionately call it down here in Memphis. You know what I mean? So this roaster is, specifically this coffee is a Nanochala coffee. Really excited about it. We're going to have an opportunity, hopefully, to speak with the producer this upcoming Friday. So you all will hear that on the podcast the following week if everything aligns. You know, things are crazy in Ethiopia right now. And yeah, I think it's something we're really excited about. This coffee is really special. And we may even have the opportunity to have it put in some pretty big spaces and places. If the Lord says the same, so we're going to trust Yahweh for that. But anyway, I've been with y'all for 5 minutes, and I just kind of wanted to give you the breadth and scope. If you're familiar with the conversations around standard sustainability, I want you to just chime in the comments or shoot us a DM. You know, what are your thoughts on how hip-hop and hip-hop culture in Black communities around the world can really provide a new way to view engaging in agriculture? Engaging in specifically the agriculture that was started due to the slave trade and due to colonialism. Like, there's a lot of trauma there. So anyway, let's hop into the episode. Shout out to the homie Carissa, and yeah, keep that coffee black. Yo, and if you've been wanting to support the work that we're doing, look, we just opened up our Patreon as well as monthly supporter options for people who like the podcast and who want to support what we're doing. I know everybody can't be a part of our Brew Culture subscription squad, the Anti-Gentrification Coffee Club. $35 a month for 2 bags of coffee and a print every month is a good deal. But, you know, budgetarily, like, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, what's popping. So I feel you. Look, we got something for you. You can, for as low as like $2, you know, support us on a monthly basis and be a part of the work that we're doing. We've gone so far with no creditors, you know, no type of investors. It's just been the community and a lot of elbow grease and grace of Yahweh. So we're going to stay on that ride, invite you to check out those things and definitely be a part of the program. All right, let's get to the business of the episode and dive into the podcast. Appreciate y'all, yo. Keep that coffee back.
Hey, yo, Carissa, what up?
Hey, what's good? How are you?
I'm good, Joe. I'm good. Let me know if I'm saying your name correctly. Is that Carissa, right?
What? Yeah.
All right, yo. I gotta make sure all the accents is in the right spot and stuff. Like, the more we talk to, like, our family in the diaspora, the more I'm like, yo, I be feeling like I gotta learn some languages. You know what I mean? Like, I be out here lacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trinidadan, what's the next island next to it?
The next island next to Trinidad?
Yeah.
Is it Jamaica?
No, Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, Trinidad and Tobago. Okay.
Yeah. People usually get it Tobago wrong, so that's like the big test.
Yep. I'm like, yo, I'm lacking. I did not pay enough attention. In school, when they were going over different countries, I was like, I didn't get it. You know what I mean? And now that I'm older, it's one of many things I have to pay more attention to again, you know?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Crazy, yo. Well, yeah, I'm glad we're finally able to do this conversation. So for people who don't know you, Carissa, introduce yourself. You're doing some really interesting work right now with coffee in Uganda. Is that right?
Yep. So I'm born and raised in Trinidad with some coffee farmers. My grandparents are coffee farmers.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, low-key, I didn't know they did coffee in Trinidad. Like, I know, like, you know, when people came through and colonized the Caribbean, they planted cash crops, and I knew there was coffee in Jamaica and in Haiti and in the Dominican Republic, but I didn't know there was coffee in Trinidad.
Yeah, like, no, like, loads of people, I think everybody, since I moved to, like, Alta Trinidad, everybody that I see, you know, my parents were coffee farmers, and we're like, what, coffee in Trinidad, what? You don't really hear about it at all. But, yeah, I think, but now production kind of is dead, sadly. Mm. It kind of died over the past decade. But hopefully we could do something to change that, like, in the future, but... Yeah, so
have you had Trinidadian coffee?
Yeah, but
what is it? Like, what does it taste like? What are the notes?
dark. It's like, yo, because so I when I moved out, I started in specialty. Like, I became a coffee geek with like light roasts and stuff. And then when I went back, it's like robusta. It's like decent robusta. It's not like awful, but they roast it super dark. And they roast it on like when I say roast, it's not like in a roast or anything. It's like on firesides and stuff.
Yep.
And then they brew it in like tins. That's how I grew up brewing it. And then that's
like how things.
So it's a different experience. I think like home is more about sitting down together, drinking coffee after work kind of thing. And like that whole rite of passage to drink coffee, like not everybody used to drink coffee. The older guys used to drink coffee. So now it's like the pool, but it's everything else around it kind of thing.
I can relate because that's we talked to my grandmother a couple episodes ago, and like that was the same experience for her. That was what it was for us. And it's really interesting to see that experience kind of shared, where it's like this rite of passage. You kind of got to get into it once you feel grown. You know what I mean? When you can get it. Dang. That's crazy. So you went from kind of drinking coffee. Your family were coffee farmers, which is that's crazy. Just because I didn't know that. And now so did you know that your family were coffee farmers when you got into kind of geeky specialty coffee stuff?
I knew, but I didn't like appreciate it so it was always like in the background, like we knew that was the thing. And then I moved to London to study and got into specialty there just as like a way of making money on the side. And then saw the kind of whole geeky part of it, as well as the social impact side of it, but never thinking of it applying to back. Like that was just a different world. And then like I started to get into like fast forward of years working now with the Chain Collaborative with farmers in Uganda, but also going back home and talking to like either previous farmers or people who want to get back in the industry, and making that link is like full people kind of thing. Because it's also like when I go back home, right, is this generation of people, I mean like my generation, who know coffee as like Starbucks or Trade Wave, which is a completely different narrative to the colonial crop and things that their grandparents grew and still brew. It's just that big difference that like they really know about it, which is why I kind of connected with you, because is that like that narrative of the coffee industry not being just one take, which is Tude Wave or Western take.
No, I relate with you, and I remember when we first chopped it up, like I was telling you about my grandmother and how she used to pick cotton, and people think like pick cotton like we're talking slavery. No, they weren't slaves. This is post sharecropping. She was picking cotton because she was a dark skinned woman. I mean, like I'm black, right? Like I'm dark skinned, but she was darker than, she was like 2-3 shades darker than me. So my mama and them just like, they look, when you meet them, they look like they're from Wanda or something. Like they're super dark, really high cheekbones. And like as a dark skinned woman in Alabama growing up in the early 1900s, her only option was to do manual labor to provide for herself. And so, like, she was picking, like, my mom actually, I thought she was picking 100 or 200 pounds of cotton a day. My mom just told me, because we just got back from Mississippi, like, my grandmother would pick 400 pounds of cotton a day. Like, she a monster. So when people think, like, oh, man, Bart, how do you, like, rap and do family and do music and educate? I'm like, you don't know my family history. Like, we work. And so... Yeah. The connection between like what that's like to come from a family that basically collected cash crops for kind of the ruling class or whatever, the colonial class, is an interesting perspective coming into coffee, because I feel a connection to the perspective or the narrative around coffee and how it's so different than the perspective or the narrative or the worldview of the people who are picking it. And a lot of times when we see this difference, the difference in perspective is often associated with a difference in monetary acumen. You know what I mean? It's almost like if you have the white perspective or the Western, kind of like the colonial European perspective, that's the only one that's worth being compensated in the industry. And so these other perspectives are seen as wrong or poor or whatever. But in reality, they don't, if anything's right, right, it's the people who are creating it. They kind of have the first right to say how it should or shouldn't be partaken of. So even when you're describing it, how people brew coffee in Trinidad, it reminds me of what I've learned about how coffee is brewed in Central America or in South America, or it has coffees brewed in Eastern Africa, or specifically when we think about like Sudan and Ethiopia and Yemen. Like, people aren't doing these, you know, they don't got scales necessarily. I mean, some people do, obviously there are upscale cafes, but then in the culture, it's about being together. It's about brewing it together. And the roasts are generally darker because people are manually roasting. And if you ever manually roast it, it's basically impossible to do a light roast manually.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's also in general, but
Yep. And a lot of times, like, I think just that perspective, that snootiness can affect us as we're trying to recontextualize or reconnect with our history. And almost kind of like, I remember going to my grandmother's house. She lives in a country, like, it's like a tin shed. Like, they built it with their own hands, right? That's their home. Mm-hmm. And so I remember as a little kid leaving the city and going to live with them for the summer and being like, ah, this is in the country. Like, you know, we use the restroom outside. You know what I mean? Like, they had a well. Like, it was like very rural. They had chickens and we used to have to pick greens and beans and shuck different stuff. And I remember thinking in my mind at the time, like, oh, this is kind of like backwards or not good. But as I've gotten older and now that my grandparents have passed, I recognize they were self-sufficient. Like, they were independent. They were totally off the grid, owned everything they worked with. And now I'm striving now at 29 to figure out how I can get my family in a situation like they were in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like you end up, you're too close, right? Like, you knew your grandparents and you knew you would, like, if somebody from the outside and looking at you, you think that you understand that. But it's easy when you're growing up then when you want to come into the coffee industry with this vision, and I'm guilty of the same, like, again, that snootiness again, down with the coffee, the specifics, and having this one vision of what the industry should look like. And then when you want to go and invoke change in the coffee industry, you get almost in part of wanting to transform it to this new way, as in, like, that struggle is what we want to progress from, but it's not necessarily that you want to completely change it to this one narrative. And yeah, that, like, my work in Uganda, that's like literally, that's what I was so conscious of trying not to do.
Because so tell us more about that. What's happening in Uganda?
Well, so working with the Chain Collaborative, they like invest in coffee growing regions to do community led development. So my project is for food security in Uganda. So right now is with, so Southwestern Uganda is with a community of farmers there. A social enterprise that exists where the community really, they struggle with nutrition and access to the, like, a healthy amount of food and then quality food as well. And that was before the pandemic. So the issue is, like, they're quite far out from the districts. So apart from income being an issue with coffee as the main source of income, is also just being able to get transport to access those foods as a whole. So what we're looking at doing is, like, they're farmers at the end of the day, what they're good at is growing food, and what that their system that they use at the moment. And we want to, it, like, build on that and encourage growing nutrient-rich foods within the community itself. To the, like, a system and feeding their families, like, in that sense. But since the pandemic, they kind of closed the borders with the Congo as well. So, and that's where that's something different. So, like, normally you'd think, okay, trade's still happening, so you could go to the supermarket and still get food, but they that they cross the borders of the Congo, and Congolese farmers usually bring in food, and they don't have access to that. So now the only people that
need
reliable food sources are the ones who grow their own food largely in the first place. So you don't want to wait until a crisis happens again to make sure security is...
Yeah, okay. To make those changes. So somebody was asking, has that region of Uganda been impacted by floods?
Not that I know of, because right now the first round crops have been growing quite well.
Okay.
But the thing is, that has been affecting their food... their food accessibility in the past, because it's so seasonal. So any floods that happen, it obviously has a knock-on impact on them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But not any farmers that we working with, not that I know. But
yeah, so I go ahead.
No, it's as I just said, it's 200 farmers that we're trying to reach. So that's wide reach in Uganda, and Uganda is not a small place, so definitely wouldn't speak for all of them when I say I don't know.
Yo, that's so crazy. So I'm thinking about a lot of people who have recognized this problem of lack of ownership by people in the African diaspora in the coffee industry, and there are a lot of people like yourself who are literally working so hard to try to give more ownership and equity back in the industry. You know, we always say $200 billion industry, we own a very small percentage. And it seems like if we could own more of the revenue that's generated by the things that are created by our people, we wouldn't need so much foreign aid, so many, situations. We could be more stable and more independent. And, that might look different. Independence might look different. It might look like my grandparents, building their own home. It might look strange from someone on the outside, but independence, when you own everything, is better than being in debt and having a lot of really nice stuff. And so what, as a lot of the people who are listening to this podcast are on a similar journey where they're trying to figure out what's their role to play, what would be ways that you would connect them with or suggest that they wanted to partner with the work you all are doing in Uganda, or they're like, yo, how can we help to revitalize, coffee in Trinidad? What, even us, I want to help, or what are things that people can do to support that,
Yeah, well, I think, so I was doing, I on that same journey, as in I definitely don't know all the right answers.
So that's first thing they can do, so the first thing they can do is follow you then, so that they can follow your journey. Yeah.
Well, I think that's why I engage with the Chain Collaborative, from a position of I have this narrative of the coffee industry from my grandparents, and then from from the complete opposite side in London on the consumer side, and I want to know more about just connecting all of that in between, as well as online producing just outside of just Trinidad, but it's literally the entire world. And the rest of the diaspora, their journey as well. So it has the coffee sustainability program. That's a good one. And that's one narrative. But just reading content by people of color and their description of the coffee industry is so valuable. Because as a person of color, you'd make connections with your own history that you never knew existed. And there's so much just power in that, I think. And also I think looking at the Chain Collaborative and other social enterprises that kind of work with the mission of, yes, we want to improve the economic sustainability of the coffee industry, but at the same time that takes years, and it has all around the world that have this as their livelihood and literally struggling to meet their families' livelihoods sustainable while we try to figure out how to make the coffee industry better. So supporting social enterprises that have missions and collaborative to help them eat and feed their families and have a fair partnership, because I think the standards in coffee is so low that if we treat somebody as a fair business partner, we consider that this big massive thing.
Yeah.
And narrative that we just have to get away from.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think supporting social enterprises We have a, like, right now, fundraising.
Say that one more time. We lost you for a minute. And somebody wants to know also what part of Trinidad you're from. They said they're from Grenada. But run it.
Me, the East. So born and raised there. I went straight from Sangre Grande in the East. Okay. Yeah. That small village there. So I went straight from there to London. Slight transition, but yeah. So I think supporting initiatives like the Chain Collaborative. Right now we have an auction going on. The fundraise for the Ugandan project, so you can check that out as well. I think just keeping an open mind, to be honest, and engaging with people of color in the industry to see what that narrative is, because there's less resources surrounding that. There's loads of stuff on TV for me. I think I'm a geek and I engage with that, and I think it's fun.
I got my fellow, I got my stag over here. You know, I got the Prismo. I'm into the nerdy stuff. I got the Kalita wave right here. I need to throw this coffee away. But no, I'm into it. And I feel you. I think part of, and this will probably be one of the last things I want to talk to you about, is like there's this balance, I think, as like children of the diaspora, or like people who are we're the youngest generation or younger generation, and we're trying to connect the stories of our ancestors to like a possible better future, right? And there's this balance you have to make of like wanting to stay curious and wanting to leave openings for new discoveries or cool, interesting things like a Prismo or like the Stag or like, you know, all these interesting innovations or ways to be more curious about coffee, but not making curiosity just something that goes kind of forward, but also being curious going backwards and saying what things have happened in the past that we moved away from that also are still valuable. So I'm like really curious about how to learn how to brew with the Jibena, which is the traditional Ethiopian way to brew. Like I'm integrating different strategies or practices or rituals from the Ethiopian practice that happens, even just integrating the number three and trying to mix that with new things that are happening, and then also contextualize it with my present, because in my community, we're primarily shaped by Southern hip hop. So 3-6 Mafia, Yo Gotti, you know, stuff like that. And so, you know, Outkast. And so it's like also integrating the hip hopness of our culture and all of those things, kind of trying to like create a space for some new contextualization, kind of sampling from the past, imagining the future, staying curious about the present, honest about the problems in the present. That's a hard thing to balance, you know, because you're kind of like in between two different worlds, you know?
Definitely, yeah. But I mean, at the same time, it's like reassuring knowing that you don't have to cancel Third Wave Coffee to make that voice clear.
You don't have to ask for permission.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's fair to both. You don't need to take away from their narrative. And it's just making sure that that's not the only narrative pushed.
And it's not the dominant narrative. It's like you don't have to check with someone to see if you're doing it right. It's more so take it from that. If you like it, cool. If you don't like it, cool. But let's continue the process of building our own thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's tough because you kind of like at the moment, I feel also the pressure of a generation whose perspective is almost dying out with nobody there to tell them. So it feels almost urgent to get that out there. And us, like, we are the people who experience it firsthand. Nobody's going to come in and take that story and publish it for us. And at least I hope that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it feels very much a responsibility of the people who engage with that to be curious and, like, get to know more. But it's tough, because you don't know, you know, where to start sometimes. But I think, like, people like you and, like, know that the Good Coffee Project in the UK, things like that. And it's like, Chantel, she's cool.
Have you connected with Chantel yet? Because she's in the UK too.
Yes, well, we can have a chat, but I bought her first set of bags a couple weeks ago by trying to get a grinder out to me to grind it.
Did we send you some coffee?
Not yet, but I know the UK is like, fuck. Yo, the Onyx box, I just oh my God, no, it's not, I need to, because I want to be a subscriber, right? I've been wanting to be a subscriber, but I'm going to have to move to the US to make that happen, not the best time to move to the US,
yes.
But still, yes.
Wait till after the election to move to the U.S. Check and see how it goes. But the Onyx box is dope. And I know Chantel was telling me, like, she wants to get a bag. And I'm trying to figure out, like, shipping is a – like, we did some coffee collabs with somebody who's in Ireland, which is, I guess, a part of the U.K., which is also confusing to me. But maybe somebody can explain it to me. Because I swear the U.K. was just England. But, okay, so – but we sent them some coffee, and customs was, like, $200. Which was the whole, they did a wholesale order with us, which was great, but the money I had to pay in customs. So I'm very afraid to ship again on my dollar, because I'm like, yo, I can't afford to do it. Maybe after we get the Onyx royalties in, I can ship some more coffee to the UK. So y'all go buy that Onyx stuff.
No, yeah, trying to get it shipped out here as well for the auction, because, you know, like, you guys are here ordering some stuff.
Oh, we got you.
Yeah.
We'll definitely get you guys some shirts. I know you ordered one, didn't you? So that one's come, and we'll figure it out. And I'll get some coffee to Chantel too. My kids be eating, yo. So I got to figure out how to get some cash flow over to.
We still get the revenue in the hands of the people.
Yep. Somebody said, "What's the Onyx?" We're doing a collaboration with Onyx. Around a natural Ethiopian coffee, and it's a part of our 1616 collaboration series. The 1616 collaboration series is essentially trying to redeem the negative history of, like, colonial collaboration across cultures, where coffee was stolen from the port of Mocha by the Dutch in 1616, which kind of sparked the colonial conquest. It was honestly a big part of what at the time was people trying to get spices from various parts of, like, the African and Asian world. And coffee was one of those things that was very coveted. And so they ended up getting it and colonizing Indonesia and then Haiti and Jamaica, and people went to Brazil. And when I say they, I mean the plant was given to the French after the Dutch colonized Indonesia. And then the French came and colonized Haiti, and Portuguese colonized Brazil. And anyway, coffee was planted as a cash crop, along with cotton, which my grandmother was forced to pick. And so there were a lot of cash crops in the Americas, cotton, corn, sugarcane, and coffee that people, specifically Black people and Indigenous people, were forced to pick in order to fund these kind of really commercial markets around the world where people wanted these quote unquote exotic goods. And so kind of the 1616 collaboration is really just what you and I are talking about right here. We're just saying, let's let the descendants of those people start to have some say in how those goods are presented and storied, and how the narrative around them, and also around the revenue and who gets to partake in that business. So we're collaborating with Onyx, and we want to collaborate with, like, 15 other roasters, but the first part of that collaboration is with Onyx, so it's going to be dope. I've had the coffee. It's a slapper. It's crazy. The joint is, it's crazy. But is there anything, before we end today, is there anything that you would want people to know? What up, my man Gerald in the building? Is there anything you want people to know about that? And then I also have a question, like, what I think a big part of what we're doing here is we don't have the answers, and so part of it is just giving ourselves permission to dream and to imagine. And so if you could imagine what the coffee industry could look like, or what coffee in Trinidad could look like in 15 years, you know what I mean? And all my West Indians in the building saying what's up, so shout out to Gerald. If you could imagine what that looks like in the future, like, what would it look like, you know, as a part of the culture in connection to the music and the food, and, you know, what could, if there were big coffee businesses all over, and, you know, Trinidad was, coffee was super valuable in the market and people wanted it, and you guys were starting shops and roasting your coffee and all of that, like, what could you imagine that looking like?
That's a good question. Cause, like, when you say that, I think about it, and it's not too different from, honestly, how it was, except with everybody actually getting a piece of the pie. Because, like, the main reason the coffee industry died in Trinidad was because when it started, it didn't really, after colonial times, things didn't really change much. Like, so we got independence, and the plantations are still owned by the same people that owned them before.
Can you break that down a little bit, just for people who don't know, what was the process of Trinidad getting its independence from, who was Trinidad colonized by, just so people have some context?
So we were owned by the Spanish first, and then into the French, and then in long way down, largely owned by the British as a colony. We had African slaves, and then after slavery, after emancipation, they brought in indigenous laborers from India as well. I had a mix
Wow.
there. The
So
they brought
how did
in.
independence happen?
Well, eventually we had like a federation where we got like certain groups of people got a right to vote, and then eventually more and more got people on the board. The trade in Trinidad, being cocoa and coffee, weren't as profitable enough for it to be a colony anymore. Basically, that's his narrative behind it. It just wasn't profitable as the main way for things to get done. The narrative became, so we became independent, and the same plantation owners owned the plantations, except Trinidadians were now used as the main source of labor on
Wow.
coffee plantations with some pay, not enough, just enough to survive. So the same barracks that housed people, so then, during slavery times, remained the same. People just traveled around and stayed there, and could, like wherever labor was, they went and earned enough. I think in the best case, you'd earn enough money to eventually be able to rent the land to farm your own coffee on, but
Wow.
without any incentive to have like ownership over any part of the process, really. And then
Wow.
eventually, if you get ownership, you're in an industry where you kind of have to work round the clock to not have one crop one time per year and have no guarantee over like income and be able to invest like as a business that you surely have returns from. So
And you
that
don't
kind of
have
like
ac did they have access to loans or capital to be able to grow their business, or were those
not
dis were those discriminated?
No, it wasn't easily accessible because it was all like it was most population would have to have access to that, and the government that would probably have to give it. And as a nearly independent nation, it's kind of like tough to really allocate across the entire nation. And most people weren't fully like all out invested in coffee because it was just too risky. So like my grandfather, he like part of his land was coffee and cocoa. And he worked around the clock just to be able to, he had like one kid and just to be able to fit a decent lifestyle around the clock there. And that narrative is what kind of got us out of coffee, and I think in the end what got more people out of coffee and what resulted in their dying.
Wow.
Because that people kind of live to resent it in a sense. Because you work the clock, you have no returns from it. And your kids growing up working in coffee and seeing the hard manual labor, like what you said with the cotton, hard manual labor and no returns from it. So you just like, I don't like, you don't want that for your kids, and you don't want that for yourself. You kind of try to get out. But at the same time, it was community, right? Like within the villages, it was. The only thing Trinidadians had was the labor, no ownership, but they like shared that labor as much as they could to everybody in the
Was
community.
there, I have a question, and this is kind of going somewhere, but was there, did people create music or culture around the labor? Were there songs of, yo, this is
Yep.
so, yeah, so this is lit because, so obviously the context of like, this is really similar to me when I think about my people's history in America. And how they treated the labor they were forced to do. And of course, we got Negro spirituals, gospel music, the blues, jazz, of course, which led to like the current form of that soul music, which is hip hop, came out of that, right? People singing while they picked, and there being rituals associated with that. And I saw a crazy video online of these Ethiopian people like singing while they were picking coffee. And I was like, yo, that's bananas. That is, I wonder if that happened in Trinidad, and it's crazy that it did. Like, people created culture around that labor. You know what I mean?
Like the struggle, right? And it was almost like a lot of like, I don't know if you know about Trinidad Carnival, but or festival, like a lot of this stuff is characters mimicking colonial masters. The language, a lot of our language came from that, or like our equivalent to, not equivalent to rap, but Trinidad, like rap, but with more, but like some rhythm, and a little bit faster, calypso. Spoken word, like, yep. But
well, calypso was a big part of even the creation of hip hop. So, like, the Caribbean culture contributed a lot to how hip hop was created, because in New York, right, you have all these Caribbean peoples who have moved, and that contribution of, like, you know, speaking over the rhythm or the rhythm is like what led into the MC. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's the master of ceremony. So that's bananas. So okay, let's go to the question of because people ask me all the time, like, yo, why do you all make the connection between hip hop and coffee? But I'm like, you don't understand. In African cultures, music and dance is a part of our culinary practice, and it's a part of our economic practice. Like, it's a part of the way we do work. It's a part of the way that we consume food. These things are intertwined, right? They're like this circle that it is expanding outward. And so, like, I have a question. Like, so if you could imagine a future for, like, Trinidadian coffee, like, would music be a part of that? Also, what are some Trinidadian artists that we need to check out? Because I got to get put on game. But yeah, what would the future of Trinidadian coffee look like to you? And then would music be a part of that? If so, you know, what might you imagine that to be? And then what artists would you recommend as we kind of tune out for today?
Yeah, well, I think in the Trinidadian coffee industry as a whole, I think keeping the community alive there and that collaborative spirit is like something that we still have, but I think we could continue and connect the rural, the small island, but we want to connect the rural parts to the cities as well. And I think every Trinidadian from literally every corner and every part of the diaspora can connect to the music, because it's like that we have ownership over, like that's our story, and that we know told from our ancestors,
and that's how we tell our stories.
Yeah, exactly. That's our history in the purest form, and that's what we lived with. So definitely, that's a part of it. Wrong. Calypso Rose is like, I don't know if you ever heard of her, but she is incredible. She's the big one, and she's like a
Older
woman. Yeah, she's the one. And Cass is like a personal favorite. Soca music is everything.
Okay. Yo, you gotta DM me these people.
Yeah, for sure. And well, I mean, reggae is everything, right? Like Caribbean people don't want to fight amongst each other and say Trinidad versus Jamaica, but when we go to the Caribbean, we support each other like all the time. But reggae is the one. So I think that's my just a fair industry, to be honest, and which is not very much to ask for, I think, and that's why all of us looking towards it as well. But
So okay, look, this is the last question. I'm just, my imagination's on fire right now. So if you could imagine a concept shop, right, a cafe that sold coffee that was roasted, in Trinidad, grown in Trinidad. You guys made like drinks that were catered towards the culture and the community. The music, obviously. What would that shop look like? What would it sound like? What kind of processes would you be curious to try with the coffee? If you could imagine like a concept shop in Trinidad to kind of be a representative of what could happen, like what might that shop look like?
I think like the team, you know, I don't know if you know Inamoca, but Inamoca is our island to drink coffee, and that's like what I want to maintain. I think the main vibe is, well, the music, obviously, background, but the main vibe is to have tea leaf and like the dark roast drinking culture all in the same space, right? So you make it openly without any kind of exclusiveness, just walking, and you have a community of people willing to test brewing ratios and extraction on a sampling. Also equally, you know, process differently, improve on, be able to have ownership over beans, and natural, washed, like honey process, everything, straight up to how you roast it, And you make that, you have control over that as your product, and then go straight into it, roast it, and distribute it. That's the dream.
What would the name be?
I don't know, man. I haven't gotten to that point yet. But
I want to know.
I'll let you know when it drops. One day. We have a dream. Yeah.
That's beautiful,
yo. I think you'll be a part of that. I mean, if it ever does come to fruition, I think you'll be a part of that.
Look, we're going to buy however many sacks we can afford. Let us know. We support it. We'll come down and do a concert. And you know, kick some rhymes, like whatever we need to do, we gonna make it happen.
I think Coffee Black after God's Property, we could do a Calypso album.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with that. Yeah. No. I think that a Calypso album would actually be super dope. I'm a big fan of, and I've been listening to Burna Boy a lot. I don't know if you listen to Burna Boy.
No.
He's Nigerian and he does somebody said dog. So I think that for me, I just love African rhythms, Caribbean rhythms in music, and I love I've been listening to a lot of Brazilian music too, a lot of like baile funk, and like fusing that with like southern sounds and hi-hats, and like it's just something I'm really interested in. So I think that would be super cool. I listen to a lot of like Caribbean music on vinyl, so I like collect vinyl and records and stuff. Yeah. So I actually have a Calypso record. I don't know, bro. I gotta go look it up. I just remember I would listen to it just because I was curious.
Let me know, because it's released. You can see the similarities in like Afrobeats and like Nigerian music and soca music, reggae music. Everything is like so intertwined. It's like fascinating how that
is. It's crazy to see the like connections, and now we're making these same connections. We're expanding it to coffee and. Man, I'm excited about the vision you're casting for the future. I think this is an important conversation for other people in the diaspora who are trying to think about what does it mean to kind of reclaim coffee in their specific communities. And I think for a lot of African Americans, it's important for us to think about, like, man, coffee is a Black thing, all the way down to Trinidad. And I'm curious. I'm excited. I want to try some Trinidad. I want to try that, like, 10 method you were describing. It could be cool. So I had an idea, and then I got to go. But I had an idea for the shop you're gonna start one day, right? That I had, like, you could have like a community tin that's basically like your, somebody said, Trini Bean. That's hard. So I have an idea, like you could have a communal cup. So you know how shops have drip, right?
Yeah.
So instead of drip, you all have this tin. And I think there could even be a cool opportunity to do stuff, because when we talk about the $200 billion in coffee, it's really not in roasting necessarily or in like selling cups at a cafe. The money a lot of times in export and then in the technology end of things. And then obviously when you're doing bulk purchases and shipments. So like if you all created a new piece of brew method and did a GoFundMe for this new brew method that's kind of based on an updated version of that tin, like that could be lit. And then you all can serve that as a means of like how you get your communal cup, right? And then if you want to try something specific, you can do it on, you know, some type of pour over method or whatever, you know. But I think that would be super cool.
I need to get working on that. Don't let it out too much. Because it like I thought, like my grandfather told me how to do that when I was like 10, which is too young to be drinking coffee. But like, that's how they did it, straight back to his grandfather probably taught him to do it just like that. And all people that I know still do it like that, where like deep, like where they still grow their own coffee and roast it themselves and drink it themselves.
That's amazing that people, so there are still some places where people are doing it today?
Yeah. Like I met this woman when I went back home last time, and she grew her own coffee and she wants to go back into the coffee business. But she says that she doesn't know how to do latte art and she's scared to get in because that's her main barrier. I was like,
forget latte art.
But it's just crazy because, like, it's like, you know, she knows how to do everything. Like, so in my mind, she knows everything about coffee and she does, but she's scared because she doesn't know how to pour latte art. And
that is the problem. That is the problem with where the industry is. People who literally in their blood have done 99% of the work, 100% of the real work, feel like they don't get to have a say or ownership in this thing because they can't do latte art, or they can't tell you the TDS of their coffee, or because they don't know how to do a pour. And I'm like, stuff like that makes me want to take all my nerdy stuff and throw it out the window because I'm like, that's worth it. If this is what it's going to be, who cares?
Exactly, yeah.
I heard somebody say at Rico this year that, and it was one of the African women who were speaking on the panel. She said, roasters come to Origin and they want to tell farmers what to do. But if you're being honest, farmers can learn how to roast. Most roasters cannot learn how to grow coffee.
That's true. That's true.
So if we're going to say who's the expert and the authority, who's the one who should have a little bit more clout, it's the person who can do the thing that cannot, even if you try to grow coffee in most, in the UK or in America or in Australia, it's going to taste gross. You can do the best work. And that's why for me, I like one of the people who were here earlier, my man G, and G was like, he's Italian, and he's struggling with, like, how to embrace the coffee heritage of Italy because of colonialism and kind of even how that is kind of where people assume coffee comes from now. That's what a narrative points to. And there's this idea that if you're not doing it in the way of the people who were kind of the last people to get to coffee, you know what I mean? Like, if it made it to Europe, like, last, you know what I mean? Like, went to Africa, and then where we go to the Middle East, even Asia, and then you kind of get, you know, coffee being exported to these other places in Europe. And so, like, how do you get to come? Like, I think about coffee like a cipher, you know what I mean? And I don't know if they do ciphers in calypso music, but in hip-hop music or in breakdancing, there's a cipher, and normally one person starts and then people kind of join, and it's a circle of music and improvisation. You don't get to tell people to change the beat if you're the last one to walk up to the cipher. Like, you can participate, you can kick some rhymes, you can rap a little bit, but you don't get to change the music. You don't get to, like, take over. You the last one here. Like, just be glad you can participate. So that's kind of the thing, right? Yeah, just try to keep up. So that's how I feel when you describe that woman who's growing, roasting, brewing her own coffee. She just needs to tell everybody else to try to keep up because she's doing the work.
Yeah, exactly. She just needs to stand and do her Enama Cup thing, and you need to get in line. And the thing is, it's not even about teaching her how to do latte art necessarily. It's about getting people to appreciate what she has created.
Yep.
And that's like, is about changing the narrative, even locally, because imagine that's in Trinidad. So she's marketing to people whose grandparents grew up with the same struggle that she persevered through to bring coffee today.
Yep.
And, like, our generation's narrative is walking into, like, a nice cafe with Wi-Fi, a nice lighting, and that's the only view of coffee, but that is not even in their own heritage.
And we think we've been so indoctrinated to think, oh, that's the right way. And if you're not doing it in the way that our ancestors did it, somehow that's the wrong. If you're doing it differently than our ancestors, then you're doing it right. That's crazy. Like, that's literally we've been brainwashed. And so, like, not to say there's anything wrong with that, but to say that's the only way to do it, like, that's wild. And so, no, you're right. And I think even if you do want to learn latte art, like, my latte art sucks. I say that all the time. Like, my latte art sucks. I don't care. I care more about, like, brewing coffee and sharing it with people. And it's hard to share a tiny cup of espresso. Like, it just is. And so the sharing communal aspect matters more to me, which is why I spend way too much money on pour over methods. But I think if you want to learn that, there's a right to learn it. Education should be available. And there are some really dope black people who can put you on game, like Michelle, Anthony. Like, if you saw the barista championships in Nashville in like January, it's some black people throwing down. So if you want, if she want to know, we can get some brothers and sisters over there. You know what I mean? That's easy. Yeah. My man Steven at the Coffee Enthusiast, he killing it. Twins, he killing it. But it's like, that's even if so if they want to do that, we can do that. You know what I mean? But the main thing is like you said, like we need to learn to elevate these beautiful people in our communities who are doing these amazing things that get overlooked too much because people only care about the sugar and the cream. Literally, the latte art. When there's so much beauty in the blackness of what God has brewed in our people and people just overlook it, you know? And so that's kind of, I'm just really happy to be able to have had this conversation with you to help share this story with people.
Yeah. Thanks for the space because you're doing some incredible stuff. And I think it's amazing that your mission in the US and missions in the UK and Africa and Trinidad all connected.
That's because we're all connected.
It's all mind blowing. So yeah, thanks for this discussion. It was incredible. And thanks for being a part of like the auction and my fundraising as well. I think
that is
awesome. So.
Yes, thank you for being here. Of course, we're super happy to work with the auction and excited for the work you're doing in Uganda, for the work you're going to do in Trinidad. We praying for you. You know, we got love for you. We're going to have to go down there and kick some rhymes with y'all soon.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Calypso album.
Hey, I'm with it. Well, you got to do a feature. If we do the Calypso album, you got to do a feature. Okay. Hey, yo, we'll stay blessed, family. Keep that coffee black. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too. See ya.
Peace. See ya.
Hey, yo, so check it. By popular request, Coffee Black presents our first ever coffee subscription program, the Brew Culture Subscription Box. We've gained so much positive feedback and interest from our growing community for our Gucci Mane blend that we've sought to bring you a monthly subscription via our website. So what does that mean for you? One, mad money savings, yo. For $35, you'll receive two 12-ounce bags that can make up to 40 pour-overs. That's 90 cents a cup. Compare that to your local Starbucks price. Two, inside perks. You'll be first in line for our newest and latest releases, including monthly admittance to the private brew-ups, our monthly coffee ciphers happening in our private Facebook group. Three, you'll be supporting a Black-owned business that continues to seek to build up the Black community in Memphis and worldwide through reclaiming Black coffee culture.